Indeed. Ed in Laredo, Texas, fast blast me that, hey, Art, ham radio is also responsible for your being married today, isn't it? At least the Brotherhood of Ham Operators. No, that's absolutely correct. Some weeks after my beloved Ramona passed, Carl Richardson, my brother-in-law, contacted his fiancée here in the Philippines and said, hey, why don't you have your sister get hold of Art? And that is indeed how it happened. And of course, the early messages that I got from Aaron were, very sorry your wife died and so forth and so on. But here I was getting in my private email these incredible messages from a young Filipino gal on the other side of the world. And I could not understand where these messages were coming from, and didn't have the common sense to ask for a couple of weeks. And finally, I did ask, and turned out, of course, that it was Carl Richardson, who is a ham, who I knew as a ham operator, who had asked his fiancée to have his sister write to me. So that's how it all happened. So that is correct, Ed, in Laredo. That's exactly how it happened. And a lot of the jobs that I've had in my life, particularly, by the way, those in radio and cable TV, all came because of the fact that I was a ham operator. Inevitably, you'll run into somebody in the technical trades, and that's how I began in radio, who's also a ham operator, and we tend to give each other jobs and do each other favors. I guess it's kind of like the typical old boy network, right? So ham radio opened a lot of doors for me, and has been a nonstop hobby all my life. So don't hesitate to inquire about ham radio. It is a blast. All right, we're in open lines. Means anything you want to talk about. We are a little bit working on best and worst days of your life, inspired by the Dean Koontz book called Life Expectancy. Back now to Terry in Ohio. Terry, proceed.
Should I pick up where I left off or
Recap
start
if you
over?
wish.
I met my soulmate about 4 years ago, and we parted in ways about a year and a half ago. And this past August, I found out that he had cancer. We had still stayed in contact with each other, but we were trying to work things out, and I hadn't heard from him. This was 3 Fridays before Thanksgiving. I hadn't heard from him for like 4 days, and I was starting to get worried. I went to bed that morning, or that Saturday morning, and I had an amazing dream. And he was there, and we were able to say our goodbyes to each other. And when I woke up, I knew something had happened. I just had this weird feeling. Went on to work that day. I was working an odd shift. When I got home from work that night, there was a message that his daughter had called, and he had passed on Friday night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was kind of a bittersweet day because I was able to, say my last goodbyes to him through my dreams.
Yeah,
But it's
I think, Terry, that there is some inherent sense in us that tells us when things like this have happened. A lot of people ignore them. They just sort of slough it off as a dream, or it was this or that. But I think it's something we all have to some degree or another.
right, I've had an odd dream even since then where him and I went shopping and he went to try on some clothes and came out in a Big Bird costume. And I think in a way that's his way of contacting me saying, hey, you need to get out of your rut. You need to start brightening back up because I've really taken this.
I couldn't agree more, Terry. I think that there is more to us than just a short physical existence in this life. And I guess that's a conclusion that I've come to after all the years of doing this program. You simply can't do a show like this without beginning to form some conclusions based on mountains of evidence. Now, not all of it reliable, and yes, a lot of what you hear on this show is pure speculation or even in the category of BS, but a lot of it isn't. A lot of it is absolutely true from person after person after person, not just the guests, but the people that call this program. So I have become convinced, not through any organized religion, not through any wise teaching or anything like that, but through the experience of doing this program over the years, that this physical existence that we lead is not all there is. There is indeed something else, and indeed I believe that our consciousness goes on, for whatever that's worth, and that may not be too much to any of you that have not come to the same conclusion. A security guard, Mel, it is, in Flint, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, Art. Sorry about bailing out on you.
That's all right, you're back, so go ahead.
Well, anyway, to make this real short, I was at work one day, and this was 1990, July 31st, at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was surveying my 17 acres of property, a rental property, and I was walking around it carrying a bucket, and in case I encountered something that should be picked up. And I was walking along, bright, beautiful, sunshiny day, sun shining in clear skies. All of a sudden, I got this pressure in my chest. And I thought, oh, no, what is this, indigestion? And all of a sudden, the sky got dark. And I realized I was looking like through binoculars. And the field of view kept getting smaller. And I said, the pressure in my chest get worse. And I said, oh, my. Mm-hmm. So I set the bucket down and sat down on the bucket, and the light went down to a pinpoint, and the pressure in my chest was worse, and I said, oh, my goodness, I'm dying. I'm having a heart attack.
Sure.
And I said, well, Lord, I guess you're taking me. I guess this is the end of it there. So I just gave up, you know, and all of a sudden, well, you wear earphones. You know how you hear sounds over top of your head? You don't hear them actually in either ear?
Sure.
And I heard this voice, and it was like over top of my head, and it said, get up.
Really?
Get up and walk to the office, knock on the door, and tell Beverly you're having a heart attack and to call 911.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, I can't see, and I can't breathe, and my heart quit beating, so okay, I'll get up. I got up, and I started walking towards the office, and it was really weird. It was like I was floating over there and like I was seeing through a haze. I mean, I could see, but it was like picture art or something. And this voice continued to speak, and it says, you're going to be all right. You're going to have a nice, long rest. Well, presently, I was at the door, feeling no pain or nothing. I knocked on a door, and the door was opened up, and there stood this woman. We had two different ones, never knew which one would be on. I had no idea who was there.
Right.
And it was Beverly, and she said, what's wrong? I said, I'm having a heart attack, Bev. Call 911. And the lights went out. I didn't know nothing. And presently, I guess, minutes later, I was only 3 miles from a hospital. And I all of a sudden become aware again. I cracked my eyes in a really bright light. I could hardly see. And I heard this rattling noise. And I'm laying down. And I see my partial vision there. I see this metal tray being rolled up beside me, and it's got all kinds of instruments on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see these hands reaching for these paddle looking things.
Oh my God.
And I thought, oh my, they're going to shock me.
Right.
And then I heard this voice says Pulse, and I heard this woman's voice say Zero, and then he said something else, and she says Zero. And I thought, oh, they're going to shock me. I better let them know I'm alive. And I forced myself, and I sit right straight up. And this doctor was standing there, and his eyes got big around his dinner plates, and he looked at me, and he said, put your head down. We're trying to save your life.
Wow.
So I laid back down, and I said, I'm glad somebody's trying. And then he calls to this nurse again, standing in front of a machine, and he says, Pulse. He says, 33. Then he says another number, something else, and she says, 66.
Right.
And he says, we got him. We got him. We got him back. And
you weren't even supposed to be hearing any of that. That's amazing.
And then he says to me, he looks at me dumbfounded, and he says, I can't believe this. He says, how long have you been awake? I said, well, I just woke up. And he said, you were DOA. I said, what?
My God.
He said, you were DOA.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it. And I did have a nice 3 months off and rest, and I went back to work, and I'm back at work. And one day my boss says to me, he says, a guy outside wants to talk to you. And I walked out, and it was an ambulance driver sitting there. And they come through all the time, sometimes stop and have coffee at our garage. And he looked at me, he turned white as a ghost. I said, what's wrong with you? He said, I'm the guy that picked you up dead and took you to the hospital. He said, you was alive. I don't believe it.
Huh. That's absolutely an astounding story. And it kind of puts an exclamation point on what I just said. We are not just the physical beings that we are at the moment, those of you listening to me. We are much more than that. There's more to us than all of that. And these are the stories that prove it. And over the 20-plus years that I've been doing, the national show right now, I've proven it to myself. And I wonder how many of the rest of you who are long-term listeners could say the same thing. Listening to this program, listening to the people call in with stories like that, and the voice that talked to this man and told him that he would be all right, individually, they might not mean much. Collectively, they mean everything. Okay, well, let's move to Jim in Lakewood, Ohio. You're on the air, Jim.
Yeah, hi, Art. Boy, I had a bad day 14 years ago. I stupidly mixed alcohol with a Valium-type drug, and I fell asleep while driving, and I crashed my car into a house that was close to my home, and my entire car went inside the living room of the house through some French windows, and my car kept on trying to go. It blew out the tires. All four tires were blown out. And I was trying to, I didn't know this because I had a severe concussion, and so the amnesia kicked in and da-da-da. But I was driving my car like I was still driving while I was in this guy's living room, and he had incredibly nice wood floors, I found out later, that I wrecked. But I was driving, like in his house, I'm driving like I'm still driving on the street. And I'm smoke was coming, billowing out and everything, and he had to come over and turn the keys off so that I wouldn't make any more smoke in the house. And then because of the wheels burning and all the smoke and everything like that, the guy turned everything off, but it's really weird that a cop came later and my car was so buried into this house that the drapes came down on my car. The drapes came down where I went into the house, and the cop that came later said, oh, they must have taken Jim's car to the tow yard or something. I was still in the house. My entire car was in the house. I mean,
it sounds to me, Jim, like you were in shock.
Definitely. You know what? Yeah. I orchestrated a search because I thought that my fiance that I was going to pick up that day, I had the cops looking because my mind thought that she was with me. They're looking under bushes for her, and she never was in the car.
Gotcha. You were in shock. I hope nobody was hurt in the house.
No. You know what? That was the weird. The only person hurt was me. I had a very, very, very severe concussion. I had amnesia for the next 2 weeks. I didn't know what was going on from the next day to the next. And the only good part about it is that I survived. The only bad part about that good part, I had to listen to the judge. And I'm telling you, I paid the price. I mean,
I'm sure you did.
15 days in the Gray Bar Motel, I to this day I say to myself I deserved it, I had a sleep problem and stuff like that, but what a time to take the wrong medicine with alcohol. And
I hear you. Well, yeah. That's definitely qualifying as a bad day, Jim. Definitely driving into a house. My God. I wonder how many of us get warnings of a bad day. I mean, could we become so sensitive that instead of proceeding into the day, we just decide, no, this feels, everything about this day, have you had one of those? Everything about this day feels wrong. I'm just going to stay home, lay on the couch, and watch a little TV. I'm not going to expose myself to the possibility. No, most of us don't do that, do we? I wonder how many people have saved themselves. Of course, you'd never really know, would you? Even if you had that feeling and you took it easy and nothing happened, you would say, well, that was, you know, I was kind of dumb, wasn't I? That was dumb. I thought it was going to be a bad day and I stayed home and nothing happened. Well, you'll never know, will you, whether it would have been an awful day, whether it could have been the day you would die. You wouldn't know. A wild card line, number four, I think it is, Christopher in Pueblo, Colorado.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say what an honor it is to speak with you and how much I'm a huge fan of this show since about 1984. I've been listening off and on. But I want to tell you about my worst and best day in that order.
Okay.
First of all, I'm trying to keep myself composed. On 6/6/06, my oldest son passed away.
I'm sorry.
And then shortly thereafter, I lost 11 more friends in the last 6 months.
God, that's a bad year.
Yeah, it's been a bad year. But now I want to switch over to my best day. And I've had some incredible experiences. I could go on and I could do an entire show on.
Well, we don't have that much time. So get it to us quickly.
No, just this one on 11/27. 1997, I was in the presence of the infinite or God or whatever name you wish to put on it for 7 hours. It actually came on at the last quarter at 11:45 on the 26th and lasted 7 hours into the morning of the 27th, which that year happened to be Thanksgiving. And I had no idea what had happened to me. I mean, first, I thought I was dead, and you know, I started making notes to people. But ironically, even though I had lots of family in Los Angeles where I was, I would normally be eating Thanksgiving with one of them. But for some odd reason, being by myself, and in the area that I was in, I ended up going to a smorgasbord. And then there was a man sitting alone, and I asked if I could share a Thanksgiving meal with him, and he said, sure. I sat down, and of course, I'm spilling out about this experience that I had, and it just so happened that he was a Tao priest. And he had, like, you know, he said, you've had an enlightenment experience, you know. But I also wanted to mention that I think this show is one of the greatest opportunities or tools to help change, and I do believe that we still have the opportunity of change. And I also would like to request of the collective consciousness throughout the show that I'd be able to complete the task that the infinite God gave me shortly after the enlightenment experience.
All right. Well, I hope that that works out for you. And we don't do those mass experiments here and there. At least I don't anymore. I've learned that we don't really know about the power of collective consciousness yet. We don't know that mistakes cannot be made. And so, as you know, I have an aversion to trying that unless the whole world appears about ready to end. And then, yes, I would muster up all the collective consciousness we could have and try and do something, because what's to lose at that point? It is interesting, isn't it, these worst days that people have. You have to wonder, could they be avoided? Now, as I mentioned a little while ago, if you avoid one, if you stay home and then nothing happens, you're never going to know for sure that it would have been your worst day. But I still would beseech you, if you think, if you wake up in the morning and you think that something is going to go horribly wrong during the day, and yes, you do get those feelings, even if you're about to board a plane and it feels horribly wrong, don't get on. Listen to yourself. We have some inborn, I think it comes frankly from our ancestors, some inborn sense of impending danger. Now, the book by Dean Koontz, Life Expectancy, is definitely going to highlight this for you. But we all have some inborn sense when something is really not right. When something's going to go horribly wrong, you know it. If you're listening to yourself, it might be only a light feeling, but learn to pay attention to it and then learn to act on it. I'm Art Bell. Well, good morning, afternoon, or evening, whatever time of day it is, wherever you are. Yes, of course, this is a time for reflection. Christmas rapidly approaching, and yes, we will do our yearly prediction shows toward the end of the year, next week. And you might want to begin thinking about that right now because, well, because our predictions are important. Now, I don't want you to just call up and sort of make an off-the-cuff, I think I'll get on the radio and just talk type prediction. I want you to really think about it a little bit. Think about what you believe is going to occur in the year 2007. Give it a lot, but give it a lot of deep thought. You've got lots of time. Begin now. And so if you would, please use your best psychic sense, and we'll try and have the best. We hit an awful lot of them this year. Kind of show we ever had. We review the predictions that were done for 2006 and, of course, do predictions for 2007. This is a yearly event now that's been going on, annual event that's been going on, I think, for the last 10 or 15 years at least. First-time caller line, Sean in Las Vegas. You're on the air.
Art, how are you, my friend?
I'm well, sir.
Good, good. I'm a fellow radio person. I've never heard your show before, but I'm hearing it today, and I had to call in with my story.
Okay.
Back when I was 18 years old, I was friends with a news anchor who had relocated to Presque Isle, Maine, which is, mm-hmm. for those of you who don't know, the northern tip of Maine.
Yeah.
I was in Boston, Massachusetts, 7 hours away. In my infinite knowledge, this is my worst day ever, by the way, I decide I'm going to go up there to visit her. Now, she's back in Boston to visit her family for, you know, her birthday. I decide, you know what, this Sunday, I'm going to come up and visit you, Marcia. She's like, all right, sure. So I pack my clothes. I pack some music for the road because I'm going to be driving in the sticks, and there's no radio in the sticks. I forget my clothes. I forget my music. So I start driving. Pass through New Hampshire, pass through Maine, get just south of Bangor, and I see a sign for food. I haven't eaten yet, so I'm like, all right, sure, go over there. I'm driving an 89 Volkswagen Cabriolet, small car, convertible, definitely a girl car, but I was driving. It was lovely. I get my food, let the car rest for a couple minutes, get back on the road. Now, when you scarf down food, Art, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Get a little gassy. So I got a little gassy on the road, and I felt I'm going 100 miles an hour, and it's a convertible, so no one will smell it. It wasn't gas. In the middle of nowhere. Lovely.
Oh, my God.
This is only the tip of the iceberg. So I get off at that. It gets so much worse.
Something. Okay, well, I don't know if I want to hear about how much worse this gets.
That's as disgusting as it gets. The rest is just hilarious. I had to share this. I had to lighten it up because there's a lot of sad stories. I feel bad for these people, but we need to make it funny here. So
okay.
I get off at the rest area, and I clean up. I'm wearing white shorts, shows completely. It doesn't, I clean it up. Get back on the road. Now, around exit 40, I see a sign for Rite Aid or something like that. I'm like, I'll get some Maine shorts or something. They closed at like 4 p.m. on a Sunday because this is the sticks of Maine. Get right back on the road. I see a sign for Walmart. Like, yes, they're always open. I pull off. The Walmart hadn't been built yet. Art, I get back on that road. I accelerate. And I hear, Art, my transmission died on my car with stained shorts. Now, it gets better. Because I don't have AAA, and she's 10 minutes behind me.
Uh-huh.
So this girl I have the crush on has to pick me up.
Oh, my God.
Her AAA car to get my car back down to Portland. And she had to see what had happened about an hour earlier.
I think I would have kept on driving. I don't know what I would have done.
If I would have pushed the car the five hours back south to Boston. That was most humiliating day. But my friend, as one radio person to another, you've been in it for much longer, and hopefully I will continue to be in it. You're doing a great job. I love it.
All right. Thanks, Sean, and good luck to you. And after that, this is where we'll take our break. We'll be back in a moment. You know, it may be that more people tend to remember bad days than good days. Looking at what's lined up for me, almost all of them are the worst days. So off we go east of the Rockies to Rick in Kansas City. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Art. Been, I think, about 3 years since I talked to you. Last time I was on 40 meters.
All right. Well, you know, I think I recognize your voice.
Yeah. Remember I was the one that was doing my Ross Mitchell impersonation and you popped in?
I do recall.
Yeah. And anyway, mine is kind of along the same lines as the last fellow there. I spent 20 years in broadcasting.
Yeah.
And when I have a bad day, it just seems like several things happen all at once.
Inevitably. That's the very nature of a bad day.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. A lot of bad things are going to happen, not necessarily just one.
But this happened to me when I was still in radio, and it's kind of amusing, and it's amusing now, so it's kind of along the same line as what happened to the previous caller there. I was laughing. That was pretty good, I'll have to say. But anyway, I at the time, I was living in Atchison, Kansas, and I worked in St. Joseph, Missouri radio, which is 22 miles away. And I woke up, and I had this horrible pain in my neck. And my left-hand side was, almost kind of numb. So it was pinching a nerve. Anyway, it took me a while to get up out of bed. And I finally got up. And I got on the phone, and I was trying to find a chiropractor or figure out what was wrong. So anyway, I found one in St. Joe, and I was in so much pain, I had to wrap a towel around my neck to kind of support my head because it hurt so bad. Anyway, I got out to the car, drove all the way to St. Joe, went to a chiropractor, got my neck snapped back into place. He gave me a little neck brace to hold it there. They gave you this massage with kind of an electroshock thing that tenses the muscles up to hold it into place. So anyway, I get this done, and I have a radio shift in the afternoon. So I was thinking, well, you know, I'll just get doctored up, and I'll still go do my shift because I love radio. So anyway, I get all of that done, and on my way back, there's a small town you pass through on the way back to Atchison. I saw a deer running from the side of the road. So I slowed down almost to a stop. The deer still hit the side of the car anyway, ran right into the car. The head of the deer came through the window, hit me in my face.
Oh, no.
Twisted my neck, threw it out of place again, and this is all true. Anyway, I was in pain again, severely, so I turn around and I go back to St. Joe with deer mucus on my shoulder, my hair, the side of my face. Yeah. I go back to this place, pay another $50 to get my neck snapped back into place. Anyway, at this point, I decide I'm going to drive, you know, because he's given me a prescription for painkillers, which I hadn't filled yet. I thought, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to call in today. I am not going in today. This is a bad day. So anyway, I called the station, and the then general manager says, that's the most bizarre lie I've ever heard. He said, if you don't show up for work today, you're fired. So I go back out to the car. I still haven't changed yet, so I got a little bit of blood on my shoulder, deer mucus, and all this stuff in my hair, the whole nine yards, and there's some blood on the door. It didn't kill the deer. Uh-huh. And there's fur stuck on the molding and all that stuff. So I drive all the way up there. I walk in like this, and he's standing there with this stunned look on his face, and I said, I wasn't lying. And I told him the whole story again. And he goes, I've got to see this. So anyway, we go out in the parking lot. He looks at the car door, looks at me, and he goes, well, that's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. I couldn't believe that, so I'm really sorry. Why don't you go on home there? And that's how it ended. I still had a job, but he didn't believe me until I drove again all the way back to St. Joe to show him this.
I see. Well, that's the way radio is. It's kind of like the mail must go through, and no matter what happens, you pretty much got to be there. I recall, actually, I think it was in Las Vegas. I was fired from that job no less than about a half dozen times, and generally rehired within the hour. But I worked for an interesting person. I won't go any further in. Actually, I wrote about it a little bit in the book, The Art of Talk, you know, describing some of my career. But it's been a very, very, very interesting life, to say the least. Wildcard Line, Joe in Oklahoma, you are upon the air.
Hi, Art. How are you doing, sir?
I'm just fine.
Excellent. Hey, my story, real quick, it has a lot to do with what you kept saying about, you know, just having an idea and having a feeling early in the day that, you know, something was going to go wrong.
You've got it.
I live in central Oklahoma, a town called El Reno, just west of Oklahoma City. And as everyone well knows, tornadoes do go through Oklahoma frequently.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I drive a delivery route to Wichita, Kansas during the night, and I was due to drive that evening. And I have, you know, I always pay close attention to the weather. Saw it was a beautiful, clear day, and I saw that, you know, we were going to have some anticipate some storms that evening. So, you know, I was prepared with my rain gear and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I had this feeling, Art, that I was going to see something that night. It was a gut feeling so much that I went and I got my video camera. I made sure the battery was charged. I had a still camera, packed all that away. As I'm eating dinner with my family, getting ready to leave, I leave about 7 in the evening, and the storm rolled in, and it was pretty treacherous. My wife is from Kansas City. That's where she grew up, and it's not quite as used to the tornado activity as we are, the native Oklahomans, you know. And I asked her as I was about to leave, I said, do you have a plan, you know, if something were to transpire, what's your plan, what are you going to do? She said, well, I'm going to go, you know, get in the hall closet. I said, no, not in Oklahoma, you don't go get in the hall closet. I said, you go find what we call a Frady hole, which would be a storm cellar or a basement of some sort.
Sure.
And she was kind of put out with me that I was, you know, trying to tell her that she needed to have a plan, and looking at me like, you know, I know what to do. And I said, no, you need to either go to my mom's, which is down the street. I said, you know, the next door neighbor has a cellar. You can get there. But you need to be prepared. And she kind of blew me off. I kiss my wife and kids goodbye and leave for the evening. And I no sooner than get on the interstate, and as I'm crossing over to get on the eastbound side of Interstate 40, I look back to my right, and there are two funnel clouds dropping out of the sky within a quarter mile of my home.
Oh, my God.
So I pull over immediately, call her. I said, get the kids together. Get outside. I'm going to be coming. I'm turning around to come and get you. And at this point, one of them has already dropped to the ground, and she's in the truck. My cousin next door.
Uh-oh, you're starting to break up on us.
Have you got me, Art?
I've got you.
My cousin and his two daughters who live next door, he is just coming home to get them, his daughters, which are home alone. They all gather together and go to my other cousin, which is his brother's house, who has a cellar. So I realized that they're safe and sound with him and their safety. So I get my video camera out, and I'm filming this thing drop out of the sky within a quarter mile of my home. And as I watched it later on, was kind of tickled with myself with just the adrenaline rush. And I'm just laughing to myself thinking, I knew this was going to happen today. I knew it. Fortunately, it went the opposite direction of my home, went through a local airport, destroyed the airplanes and hangars and so on, and ended up chasing the storm for the rest of the day. Got home that night, and my wife was so apologetic for not listening to me, and she said, from now on, if you've got a hunch like this, then I'm definitely going to pay attention to what you say.
Okay, well, that's what we call it, a hunch or a feeling in the pit of our stomach. I don't know. Just those, whatever words you want to put to it, if you're listening to yourself, you will know that something is going to happen. And in that case, it means get prepared, or as I said, maybe just stay home. Just cancel whatever plans you had. And it's a wonderful way to avoid what otherwise will turn out to be very tragic indeed. On the international line from Canada, Stan, you're on the air.
Hello there, Art. How are you doing?
Okay, sir.
I think the topic of the program tonight was your best day and your worst day.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting mostly worst days.
Well, my best day was when I married my wife, and my worst day is when I lost her.
I hear that.
I'm kind of curious. How long were you and Ramona married?
How long?
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking that.
Not at all. Better than 14 years, sir.
Was that right? Did you have any children?
No, we did not.
Yeah, well, my wife and I, I'm sorry to say that we lived together for like maybe 14 years. And then after 10 years, you know, before that, I asked her to marry me. So I had 10 years with a wonderful woman.
Well, that's about all I guess we can ask. I don't know. The Lord has his own way of doing things. And the fact that Ramona was taken from me, there's just no answer for it. And there are no words of consolation when you lose your mate. Many people will try and provide words of consolation, and the only ones that really have any meaning and are true are, number one, that the only thing that's going to help is time, and number two, something that I did not pay attention to myself, and I just got lucky, are don't make any important decisions. If you lose somebody that close to you for that many years, don't make any important decisions right away. And number two, the only thing, no words are going to help. Everybody's going to say something. And it's all going to be meaningless, except that time will help, and time will be the only thing that will help. West of the Rockies in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Poppy in Tucson, Arizona. I was a young widow, too, at 35, and I've never heard any more truer words than those. But I wanted to tell you the best day of my life. It happened when I was 5 years old. I was born in Indiana, grew up in Indiana. My grandparents, well, one set of them, had a house on a lake called Big Lake. And me and my older sister were ice skating, and I fell through the ice. And I, you know, in the wintertime, we were all bundled up, so it just, it was even worse because you can't move. And my sister kept trying to grab me, and she was screaming, and the ice kept breaking under her feet, and she kept, you know, backing up on her ice skates. It made it very difficult.
Right.
And I remember going up under and hearing voices saying, "You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right,"
really?
And, which was really weird. Yeah. And I pretty much had almost given up, and she grabbed a hold of my coat or something and dragged me all the way back to my grandparents' house, which, you know, and they ripped off my clothes and put me in cold water.
Of course. But, you know, you're the second person to say that you heard a voice telling you you were going to be okay.
Yeah, it was very strange. And I've been pretty intuitive since then.
I'm told that these kinds of experiences can make you intuitive. Perhaps instead of making you intuitive, they just make you wise up and you start listening to yourself. Do you think that might be true?
Yeah, it might be true. I've had out-of-body experiences when I was younger and clear through to when I was a teenager. And, you know, and then I stopped listening as an adult, and then I've become more aware and start listening. Like you said, when you know something bad or you feel something bad's going to happen, you just follow that voice, that inner voice, and go with
okay.
it.
All right. Thank you very, very much for the call. And, again, the lesson is driven home. Listen to that feeling, that little naggy feeling that is trying to tell you that, hey, something's going to go wrong today. Next time you have a feeling like that, listen to it, act upon it, and let me know what happens. I'm Art Bell.